And you are listening to WCOM LP Chapel Hill and Carrboro 103.5 FM. Freedom of expression is essential to a free society.
You better believe it.
Uh-huh. And we're going to freely express today here on Claudia's Speakeasy and Radio Theater, bringing Carolina coast to coast and the speakeasy to your doorstep. Your host, Claudio, Renaissance man and bard of WCOM, has opened the doors once again of the speakeasy to invite you all to come as you are.
Good morning.
And how are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Just back from the mothership,
uh-huh.
Which is the reason I've been gone for the last few tries. Actually, it's been culinary. Some chef gigs have come up, as well as just too many other things to keep me from doing the show over the last, what has it been, couple of weeks?
Well, it's been longer than it should have been, Claudio.
Actually, I'm trying to save Audrey on the recording process. In the studio today, we've got Blake Tedder.
Hello.
Good morning. And we're going to go into a pilgrimage that he just undertook. He was actually on the show when we were still in the old studio, right?
No,
when
I
you
was
were
in here.
You were in here, okay. My memory's getting zigzagged. And we discussed your the whole thing. We'll have to go through it again today, the plane crash you were in and how now
you're not going through that again. I'm just kidding.
Not quite literally. Boy, wait a minute. How dare you be ahead of me?
We want you to go there and do it all over.
Yes.
Okay. I'll do it. Sure.
We'll let you live the metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to acknowledge the historic Carolina Theater of Durham as our underwriter here on Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater. And beyond that, it's going to be Audrey, Blake, and me coming at you. And when I say mothership, I was just up there because they wanted to tell me they'd taken a good long look at our political system. And they're all just penises in suits. So, you know, I was looking at them through the looking glass up there from the mothership. And that's it. And they might look like people down here, but that's it. I don't understand the neckties.
I'm not even going to make any comment on that, which, you know, might be in full agreement, but spread it out a little beyond the politicians.
Right. So we can never expect anything out of them. Just a stuffed suit, pardon my expression. So, anyway.
I get into an argument with him every once in a while because I know how people, I understand fully the discontent with the system that allows particular people to get into positions of power that can disrupt everything. But I also know people working very hard within the political system.
Oh, I agree. They're the gems.
Who are saints
in,
to put
in
up with
area.
All this and constantly striving. So I don't paint with a broad brush.
No, and I'm not trying to do that, although I think
so I do get on his case.
Yes, she does. I just think that we basically have a government that has so seceded itself to the rich to the greatest extent that they no longer govern them. Okay. They basically just become very relaxed in what they govern and what they let the fat cats get away with, and that's what we're dealing with.
Well, that's who's running the government. So
right. But this is not a political show. It's just it's a speakeasy, and, you know, that
it
first,
is now.
That first couple of sips you take, you talk about politics. And that'll
anyway.
Be that.
And we breathe.
Yes, we breathe. Take a deep breath, and hey, Blake, why don't you introduce the story you actually, and you can just do the
let's
condensed
also,
version.
Okay, I'm gonna jump in and say,
please.
Let's tell people about Blake's show on Monday morning.
We're going into all that.
Okay.
Yeah, let me get there. I'm spinning wheels.
Okay.
Hold on. So cue us in on you, first of all, and then we may have to do a little bit of a synopsis on why you did the pilgrimage.
Okay, so I'll just try to make everybody happy. I have a radio show here.
You can do that?
Oh, absolutely. I have a radio show here on WCOM on Mondays from 9 to 10. That's called the Full Lotus Kirtan Show. I've been doing that for a couple years now, and it plays Kirtan chanting music, which
very
comes from
popular.
India.
That.
Yeah, it's listened to all over the world, which is incredible. 50-some countries last couple months I've noticed that has been listened to.
It's amazing how many people pursue the more avant-garde radio stations that they can get a hold of.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? There's,
it is. I like
you
it.
Know, I've had people send me stuff from Bulgaria, and it's like, I don't even know if I can tell you where Bulgaria is on a map. I know about where it
the
is.
The general
but,
area.
Yeah.
The speakeasy has actually been acknowledged in Germany and in India.
Beautiful.
Just out of the blue, yeah.
That's awesome. So there's that. And then I'm also a yoga teacher in town, and I have a pretty unconventional style of an approach to yoga and healing that I love to do. And that has come out of my own experience in my own healing, which has it's still happening and will continue to happen over the years. The healing from just being in this life, but also going through a plane crash, which you were referring to,
yes,
in 2001. So that was 10 years ago. And we talked about that on the previous show that I was, mm-hmm, with you on. But, you know, I've had a lot of healing since a big burn injury of 35 to 40% of my body and hospitalization for 3 months. And
let me just interrupt you for a moment. It was certainly a victim of a plane crash, but also having to drag yourself and your father to safety.
Yeah.
There was no help around at all. You, yeah, had to literally go find help.
Yeah, and it was on a mountain, and we walked down a mountain, and, you know, I don't know what big spirit was carrying me down the mountain, but it was, seemed very clear what I had to do and how I was doing it, and I can't really explain.
How did you finally come to connecting with somebody that could help?
We found a road eventually, and someone was nearly hit us on the road because they were driving to go find the plane crash.
And, oh, goodness.
Nearly hit us, and they brought us down the mountain. We would have never made it down this mountain had we not run into somebody with a car.
Mm.
But the fun part about all of this is that I survived it, and I went back to it this summer. I went back to the
summer. How many years later?
10 years on
Ten
the
years.
Dot.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, same time of year. I actually wanted to make it right on the day, but it was like a couple of days before.
I did not realize that's what you were going to do when you sort of put your radio show on hold for a while. Mm-hmm. I just thought you were going to New Horizons. I had no idea.
Both. Yeah.
Well, yes, I understand.
The road trip, I took a month-long road trip, drove 9,000 miles in a month, which is way too long to drive.
Ooh.
I did a lot of big drives, multiple 10 to 12-hour drives on a regular basis.
My goodness.
And I had a lot of time with myself, but it absolutely was the most intuitive and divine and perfect trip I could have ever imagined. I just like surrendered and let it take me.
And you went solo.
Solo. It was amazing.
That's even more impressive.
Perfect. I couldn't have done it any other way. That was the lessons I had to get, was to be alone and to enjoy it, mm-hmm, by myself.
That makes it even more, I mean, to me, that makes it far more intimate. Than,
well,
and I'm not saying that sharing something like that isn't a beautiful thing, but I think having the conviction and the courage to go alone takes you even deeper.
And you know, and the other part of it is that I'm never alone.
No.
And also, you know, if my dad was still alive, he died in 2004, he would have gone back to that site with me, for sure.
No
but,
doubt.
Yeah. But he was there with me, and I felt him, and it cleared so much karma,
imagine,
trauma there.
What inspired that journey to begin with? I mean, I know that it was probably something you were going to do at some point in your life. What brought that about?
You know, I have, that's what I was saying about intuitive. It felt like I didn't make any decision with that trip. I started thinking, this is the 10-year anniversary coming up soon, and I started feeling the need to move in my life, like, just primal, like, I need to move right now. I was in a pretty wonderful but very hard relationship. Right when I got out of that, it really shifted a lot of stuff in me. It really cut pretty deep. And when we broke up, and I immediately went to India, it was like, I just got to get out and move. And there was like this impetus in my life to just move around. And I went to India. And
any particular region?
I was in the north. I was in Rishikesh and Vrindavan. Vrindavan's the holy land of Krishna.
Ah,
and
beautiful.
It was like just incredible there. But I got very sick in India too. And I came back and had really had a lot of change going on, and all changed for the better. And as the summer was coming, I'm really starting to surrender into the seasons and what they want me to do. Like, in the winter, I'm starting to surrender to, oh, I want to be quiet, and I want to go inside,
mm-hmm,
and I want to be in myself. And in the summer, I want to expand, and I want to go, and I want to do, and I want all this stuff. So I was really feeling that, and I started going, I want to take a trip out west. I miss the west. The west is a big home for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized, oh, there's the plane crash, like, anniversary coming up. I got to do this then.
Huh.
And it just all came together. And I said, well, what I'm going to do is make that at the end of my trip. That's the last place I'm going to visit. And I'm going to visit power sites around the country. And and absorb
explain,
them.
Explain power sites.
A power site for me is a site where you go and you sit with it and you just feel it. That's like the definition for me. You feel the high energy there. It's a holy site for me. It could be a it could be a monument for someone. Mostly it's not monuments to me. It's big rocks for me.
Rocks,
or
rivers.
Big rivers. On this trip, it tended to be big rocks and big landscapes that were drawn to me. But just natural places or places where indigenous cultures have done ritual or spent time, or there is their knowledge, or there is their essence there. Like, I have Cherokee blood in me, and going to the Smoky Mountains was my first stop. And when I go there, it's like big energy release for me. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I was, every place I went almost on this trip, I was just bawling and crying and gaining so much power and confidence. But I started my trip off in Cherokee, North Carolina, and in the Smoky Mountains, and was just blown away by how much it was affecting me. Like, for some reason, I set all the conditions right on this trip, or it was set for me to completely allow myself to be at these places with no strings, no nothing. And when I got there, I was just completely allowed to feel them fully, and I got it. And so every place, it would crack me open, because that was the way the conditions were. And then I would feel it immediately. I would gain power from each place. And there was a part of me that really doubted that that would actually happen. It was like, power sites, yes, I want to visit power sites. Partly because I believe that's cool, but partly because I think that's something I should do, and I think it's neat and all this stuff. But when I got there, I really started going, holy, I'm really feeling power in a way that I didn't know power could
well,
be.
You left yourself mentally and spiritually pliable.
Yeah, I was totally pliable. I was a mutable, bendable source, and I just got to go to places and that were their own crucibles of energy, and just throw myself in there and be transformed. And by the end of that trip, I was so powerful, and I still am. I've got some of it, but like by the end of that trip, I was able, and we can talk more about this, but I was able to walk to the plane crash site and find about where I think it was with like no weird negativity. It didn't have any draw me. It was just stomp on the ground there and stand.
Here's a question that comes to mind. Did it make you in any way spiritually aware of the, and I don't want to diminish it by saying it this way, but the insignificance of death?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and that's what a plane crash will do to you, too. I got that at 16. Because I've been on the edge of, and not to say that I'm completely not scared of death right now, but it's lessened in me quite a bit, because I've been on the edge of dropping this body plenty of times.
You can sense the transition point with confidence.
I've been in the white light so many times. Like, I know what it feels like. It feels great, and it's a lovely thing. And
I've spoken to friends. One in particular that became my other mother after my mother died was actually the mother of the mayor of Lizardlick, Ma Pearl, God bless her. And she told me at one time when she was dying in hospital, and she had already left her body, but she saw her whole family around her there just freaking out, not being able to take it. And she said, oh, I guess I got to go back. Mm-hmm. And she said she was in such a good place that she did not want to go back.
Yeah, totally.
But she went back and lived a good another 20, 25 years.
Yeah. Wow. I debate about sharing this. I had a, let's just call it a ceremony in the desert in Arizona. Mm-hmm. And I literally, you can see that as literally. I see it as literally.
Desert
I literally
speaks comes to mind.
Yeah, I literally left my body and felt completely at peace and ready to go. That was this trip. I mean, I had so much energy going through me at the time that it just totally released my body and was ready.
It's like getting wings. All of a sudden, you're above what bothers you here.
Totally. And even beyond, I was further out than I've ever been consciously aware of. And I had a choice of coming back or going. And it was very clear to me that there would be a lot of people in my near family and people that would, it was not the right time for me to do that.
Was
and
this a natural state you were in, or what gave you that kind of transition? Was it a dream state? Were you sleeping? What, where was this?
It was a ceremony.
That, just in the ceremony itself.
Yeah, the ceremony has a very powerful.
I can see that. Yeah.
Thing and but also this was right at the end of my trip, right before I was going to the plane crash site, and I planned this ceremony there, and for this purpose, because I knew it was going to release a bunch of stuff. But the thing was, I didn't know how powerful it was going to be, because I didn't understand really that visiting, you know, 100 power sites before you do this sort of thing is going to make you super duper powerful and energetic.
And you did 100?
Well, I have no idea.
Okay.
No idea.
Yeah,
I mean,
you just went.
I considered, you know, out there when you're going through Utah and you're driving through Utah, and yeah. I went through every park in Utah. You know, beautiful. I went to at least 12 national parks. And when you go through Utah, it's like everywhere you look is a magnificent power site. You know, there are the ones that are speak to me there, Arches National Park, and there's certain arches there and different ones like that. But when you drive through Highway 12 that goes through Grand Staircase, Escalante, and all these wonderful things, it's like everywhere you look is like, I can't turn it off. It is so big here. And it's just drawing your spirit out. And it is, you know, on that trip was the first time I really connected to why every prophet ever went to the desert. You know, like all the prophets go to the desert. If it's not the physical desert, it's the desert of their own spirit, because the desert is where you are tested the most. I mean, it is the most extreme condition, and every plant, every rock, every grain of sand is teaching those lessons of survival.
And that is also where Christ himself, if one should be a believer of that,
totally.
Spent his time meditating in the desert. Yeah.
My experience with Christ was deepened so much just being in the desert. And I forget, it's Matthew 12 or so. I don't remember what part it is. But when Matthew talks about Christ going to the desert, I mean, I got a Gideon's Bible in a hotel room that I was in at one point on that trip, going, didn't Jesus go to the desert? Where does it say
40
this?
Days and, just, and 40 nights.
And just searched for it. And I was in Matthew. Finally, he said, that's where he got tested. And I went,
yes.
I'm getting tested all the time out here. It's just like, I can't stop the test. And it's working. I'm getting over them. Like
that's a pilgrimage
like that.
I'm planning, the desert. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've had many a good friend that lives in those regions tell me you need to be here.
Yeah, and I've got, now I have pilgrimage sites there, and I hope you will too. Like I know where I can go for my health and healing if I need to.
I can't imagine the desert not being full of presences, invisible presences.
It's invisible.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah.
They're all over it.
But I can just sense that thinking about the place. And yeah. I've been to deserts in Africa, mm-hmm. but I haven't been to deserts over here.
And the deserts here, you know, and there's some experiences on my trip that I don't want to share about because they were extremely personal, and not like embarrassing, but personal as in they were meant for me and not for other people.
I understand.
But one of them was in Chaco Canyon, which is one of the oldest sites for the what they call the Anasazi culture.
Mm.
That's used lightly now because that term meant enemy. But right. It's the pre Hopi and the pre Zuni and the pre Southwestern people. The Chaco Canyon was the center of that. And what I love about this national park is that it's at the end of a 25-mile dirt road, and which is already out in the middle of nowhere. And they don't want to develop it like they've done to Mesa Verde, which I also went to on this trip, because Mesa Verde's got, you know, tour buses and stuff that are like, and people all over these ruins. But Chaco Canyon, the ruins are, you know, pretty much intact the way and the way they were, and some completely unexcavated. And that place was the most alive place I've ever been in my life. And it's in the middle of a desert, and there's sagebrush, and there are living animals around. But in terms of aliveness, I mean, it doesn't look that alive. When you're in there, it's like, why would somebody set up something in here? And it's not a typical canyon. It's like super wide and super shallow. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the space in between the walls of the canyon is, you know, couple thousand feet apart. It's huge. I mean, and it's not very deep. You know, the walls are only a couple hundred feet high. It's like, why would someone build this here? And if you scale back, it was the center of the whole empire of these people. And there are roads going in straight lines out of Chaco Canyon to various sites that were, you know, holy to this place. And it was a convergence of like energy. It's probably on a ley line.
It's a center point.
Yeah, and it was a center point, definitely. And those spirits of those people are absolutely still there. And they are, and it's a holy site for a lot of people. And it's now one of my most amazing holy sites.
Interesting that it remains so isolated. Interesting that tourism didn't go there.
Well, you know, I think for most people, it's less dramatic. It has a beautiful site called Pueblo Bonito, which is this incredible, just city that was built out of this incredible stone. But it's a little less dramatic than places like Mesa Verde, which has cliff palaces. Like the cliff palace is built into the side of a cliff where these people were. And Chaco Canyon, it's like, luckily, the day I was there, the weather was perfect for me. I was in the middle of July and August, and I was able to walk around the middle of the day in the desert. It was perfect weather. But usually in the summer there, it's, you know, it's New Mexico. It's 100 degrees, and it's brutal.
Could you have stayed the night there?
I did.
You did. Wonderful.
There. Yeah, and I actually went out into the canyon at night, which was where I felt the presence. And I was told to buy a medicine drum on this trip, and I bought one that it bought me, and and it was the first time I learned to use it and to learn to communicate and to I don't want to get too far into it, but to really use it and embrace it. And I had initiation experiences all over that place, so all over the West. It was incredible
for me. To anyone tuning in, you're listening to Blake Tedder on Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater.
Hi.
I'm here with Audrey, and I'm Claudio. And we're just basically talking about this wonderful pilgrimage that he's been on. You also brought some beautiful music with you, and I think there was a particular song by John Denver that you feel is appropriate.
Yeah, and I'm thinking this is a perfect time for it. And on this trip, you know, I had never really gotten into John Denver. I think I never really gave much thought to him in the first place, but I think when I did, I thought of him as kind of a cheesy kind of guy, and he totally is. But he's also, on this trip, I really got it.
He's like, got some deep roots.
Oh my God. The guy is like, he's cheesy because I can't handle it, because he is so in it and so beautiful. And actually, if you go to blaketedder.net, there is one of my blog posts is about how I use John Denver as a barometer. That's the title of it. And it's basically, I know a few John Denver songs. I turn them on, and if I don't like them that day, it's telling me I am not at a good place in myself. Because when I'm in a loving, awesome place with myself, Sunshine on My Shoulders is the most gorgeous song in the world. If I am hating myself and I listen to Sunshine on My Shoulders, I'm like, screw that guy. I hate that.
I'll tell you another one that does that for me as well.
That's amazing.
You know, so I use him as a barometer.
I can see that's an interesting point, because I would have to say the same thing in my life about Dan Fogelberg.
Okay, I've never listened to Dan Fogelberg.
Yeah, spiritually, he's always been that sort of a light for me, his work.
Well, you're going to make me listen to him now, because
good.
There was my vinyl.
The Innocent Age, pick that up.
Okay, I would borrow my stepfather's vinyl records, and I would always see Dan Fogelberg, and I was like, that dude, I don't know about that
guy.
I'm with the Dylan, I'm with the Stones. But so this song is called Eagles and Horses, and this became my favorite song on this journey. And I really found it on this journey, and I couldn't. There was one day in the desert in Arizona that I took off my shoes, put on my headphones in this song, and for about 2.5 hours straight, I was spinning, dancing, crying, snotting, like spitting, just losing my mind, and doing an eagle dance in the desert. And I really connected to the eagles on this trip, and running like horses, just by myself in the middle of the desert, just pulled over to the side of the road and just spinning around, no one around me. And just like, I'd never done something like that before. And this song, I listened to it on loop for 2.5 hours. This song gets me so amped up about life. And, I love it so much. So,
Eagles and Horses.
This is off of the album, the Flower That Shattered the Stone, which I love that title.
Beautiful image.
John Denver. Here it goes.
wild creatures who worship her. They gallop on feet of ivory, constrained by the wonder of dying and birth. The horses still run, they are free. My body is merely the shell of my soul, but the flesh must be given its due. Like a pony that carries its rider back home, like an old friend who's tried and true. Heavenly heights, they know neither limit nor bound. They're the guardian angels of darkness and light. They see all and hear every sound. My spirit will never be broken nor caught, for the soul's a free flying thing. Like an eagle that needs neither comfort nor thought, to rise up on glorious wings. I have a vision of eagles and horses high on a ridge in a race. Like a pony that carries its master back home, like an old friend who's tried and been true. My spirit will never be broken nor caught, for the soul is a free-flying thing. Like an eagle that needs neither comfort nor thought, to rise up on glorious wings. I had a vision of eagles and horses high on a wing in a race for the wind.
I can die to this life now. My God, I've always loved John Denver, but that takes me
like
much
it?
Deeper, yeah. I've never heard this song.
That song, the name of my blog, by the way, on my website, is called Eagles and Horses. I am absolutely obsessed with that song. And
it's
think,
beautiful.
You know, that song, what I love about it is teaching so much about freedom, and those two animals teach so much about freedom. And he was so intimate with those animals, and he knew them. He could see them so well, and I see the image that he saw, and I see that image of these horses, like wild Mustangs, running with full speed just for the joy and the thrill of running and living life.
I know.
And I mean, they just are born to run, and they're running so fast and faster and faster and faster. And then the eagles are above them just watching it all, just free as they can be. And that just...
Not bothering to wonder why, but just being.
Yeah, they need their comfort nor thought to rise up there. Oh.
It also makes you think of man that seems to be the way man most wants to appreciate beauty is by entrapping it.
Yeah, definitely.
Instead of just enjoying its freedom.
And analyzing it. Like, why is it beautiful?
Right. Let it be.
Yeah. Beautiful because it's free.
Does that song, does the rest of the album go along with that type of song?
Not really.
Not really?
No. I mean, I haven't been drawn to the rest of the album. There's a song that's right after it because it's right after it. You know, there's always a song that's like right after the song you love that you're always attracted to. And it's totally different.
Frequently different themes.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. And it's like an island Caribbean song.
Aha.
And it's, I don't know, it's about palm trees and stuff.
Doesn't quite fit with that flow. Yeah.
Yeah. But I love it. I still love that song too. And you know, what we were going to say about John Denver, and one of the reasons I'm so attracted to him is when I was in, he lived in Aspen, Colorado, and that was where my father loved the most in the world was Aspen, Colorado. And I went there.
I can understand.
Yeah, I went there as a kid a fair amount, a few times. And it was like my favorite place on earth too. And that was also where, I mean, it obviously had a bunch of karma there for us because we nearly died in a plane crash there in Aspen, Colorado.
Of course, John Denver did die in a plane crash.
And John Denver also died in a plane crash. So I feel like I've got a big connection to him. And there's this mountain in Colorado that my dad was extremely attracted to. He wanted to buy some land next to it. And I love it too. It's called Mount Sopris. And I've always been, it's near Carbondale, Colorado. And I was always crazy about this mountain. And if you go online, look at this mountain. It's incredible. Mount Sopris.
And Dan Fogelberg is from Colorado.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Well, John Denver wrote Rocky Mountain High right next to Mount Sopris. And they want to rename Mount Sopris Mount John Denver. There's a group out there that wants to rename it. So it's kind of like a
John, I'm not sure John would agree with that.
Yeah, well, he might not, though, like the Sopris guy, I think he wasn't like a very noble guy.
Is a person's name.
Yeah, it was like some guy's name, a white guy.
That sounds too much like a commercial idea.
Yeah. Well,
but not, no disrespect to John.
It's
John Denver.
It's his fans that want to do it. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
I'm sure it would have an element of tourism attached to it.
I didn't even think about that. Yeah,
that's what came to my mind immediately.
Yeah,
I'm sure John Denver would appreciate it just the way it is.
Yep, without a name.
So, what was it like going back to the site?
Well,
the site
like
of
I
your
was,
plane crash.
Yeah, like I was saying earlier, it was. Well, it had a lot of components to it, obviously. But what was the coolest?
Walking up the hill or walking to it—that's really more where my interest lies.
Well, this is what I want to talk about. You know, first I want to say that it just really. It wasn't that emotional for me. It was powerful, but it wasn't. I had gained so much power and so much confidence and so much. My spirit was so free at the moment that when I stepped there, I felt more solid than I've ever felt in my entire life. And especially going back there, it was like landing on the moon and putting a flag down and just going, ah! Or and it felt like I had a staff in my hand. I just slammed it into the ground right there, and it was more like a. It was just a triumph to be there and not oh, this is bringing up stuff for me because it didn't.
It would likely not have been wise to go there first.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, that's when I go, oh, that's why I did that. I didn't even, like, really process that. It just, that's why that was at the end of my trip. But what was the most interesting part to me is I never really knew. I knew we had landed on a mountain that had a ski slope on it. We had landed on a ski slope, but in the summer, so it was grassy.
Sounds to me like you're lucky the plane stopped.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a lot of components to that too.
No doubt,
We hit the aspen trees. We put the plane down the aspen trees. Had we not have done that, the wings would have still been attached when we hit the ground, which were filled with fuel, which would have exploded.
Yes.
But the aspen trees, which is now seriously my like savior tree, which is, and I'm so connected to that tree. They clipped the wings off and saved the plane from blowing up completely. So, you know, it was all very, very divine. And, But what was amazing was that I didn't realize, you know, I knew it was on near the Snowmass Mountain Resort. When I got to the site, I was, or what I thought was the site, I was amazed. We were like a ski run over from the gondola.
Oh my God.
I swear, I had no clue. We couldn't see anything, and we didn't know where we were. We had just landed, and we're on the gondola, the ski lift. We were on, I mean, so there were likely people like right over there.
Yeah.
You know, and we had no idea. When we landed, we thought we were on the far western side, and we were on the far western side of this thing, but we were miraculously, when I found it, we were miraculously close to people. I was just like, that was literally through the trees. There could have been help, but it was also early in the morning and there might not have been people there. So mm-hmm. had we have gone that route, we may not have been saved. We wouldn't have been saved by these people who found us on the road when we walked down this mountain. So I did. That's amazing. To
what,
me.
What brought the plane down very quickly?
The density of the air that day was not dense enough. And they call it the density altitude, and I don't know if they call it low or high.
Too thin, somehow?
It was low density. It was low density.
You literally dropped out of the sky.
Yeah, we literally hit a ceiling. I mean, not literally. I guess it's not literally, but there was a ceiling of where the air is dense and then where it's not dense enough mm-hmm. to produce thrust. And so the plane just goes up. And really, the plane... We tried to save it by dipping and going forward and down and up and down and up. But really what's happening is the plane is going down, straight down too fast. It is like literally going down on its belly, like a belly
flop.
You're already
pulled by gravity.
Yeah, you're being pulled by gravity so hard that to get the speed, you'd have to point the nose straight down and then swoop down and pull it back up. And it just never happened. So so that's what brought it down. But what I did, so what was interesting is I thought I was going to have to hike up a mountain to get to it. I took the gondola up, which was amazing, and walked over to the site. Sorry, and then I actually visited a couple times and hung out. And basically, I hung out on this mountain. Most of the trip, I camped wherever I was. This trip, because when I got there, I realized, oh, I can stay right by the mountain, and actually stayed in a hotel on the mountain. And every day I just spent my waking hours on that mountain, just walking around because it's my mountain. And I just got to just explore it and feel it and be with it and listen to it and talk to it. And, you know, which was really cool that I got to spend that amount of time with it. Cause I thought it was going to be go to that spot, sit all day and not be able to come back and visit it because I didn't know really where it was. But when I found it through, and you know, the way I found it was through newspaper articles and through my memory, which was, you know, through in trauma at the time, and then through what I've heard where people said they thought it was, and I found where I think it was, but the weeds had really grown, all the trees had grown back, so it was, you know, it's hard to really tell, but mm-hmm. I was right all over it.
Incredible.
And then I did though walk down the same trail that we walked out, and I tried to remember it, and I did it with my bare feet again because I was barefooted when I did it, and I also had in 2000.
He's barefooted now, by the way.
Yeah, I pretty much stay that way. in 2001, I had nylon shorts that just melted away, and it was horribly traumatic, and I don't want to get into everything about it. I don't think that's good for a radio audience, but this year I walked down barefooted, and I was amazed that I did that years ago because there were thistles everywhere.
Oh my goodness!
And I remember the weeds at the time lashing my burnt legs and it, without skin and just going. And it hurt so badly. But this year, it took me forever to walk down. We were practically running down this mountain.
At the time of your injury, your nerves probably overrode the pain.
Totally, I was in the deepest Zen state you could ever imagine, just hyper focused, aware of every sound and everything ever. And this time I'm walking going, ow, 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 ow. And the thistles and the weeds this year, they had some big snow, so they had a lot of moisture. So they were up to my shoulders this year. Whereas the year that I walked down the mountain, they were about waist high. So it was like a different environment slightly, but it was really interesting to.
Well, just as a statement, I want to throw into your pilgrimage here, and I'm bringing up Dan Fogelberg once again, not trying to sell people on him, but since you were in Colorado and that's his home base, one of the lines in one of his songs, and I can't remember the title of the song now, is blessed the hunter who slays his own pride, and
that's a beautiful line.
And blessed the hunter who slays his own pride, and the traveler who journeys the length of the light.
The length of the light. Mm-hmm. I've never heard the length of the light. I like that a lot.
There's one to Dan. I can't believe he died so young. Mm. But yeah, so did John, for that matter.
Yep, definitely.
So you feel somehow almost put back together, not that you were ever scattered, although I imagine you may have felt that way.
Yeah, but
you
feel I still feel scattered every now and again, but I feel there's a call. I don't know if we want to get that. No. Sorry.
Not picking up phone calls, sorry.
And then, you know, I feel a firmness in my belly. Let's call it that. I'm very visceral and with the body, and because I'm a yoga teacher and get into that, I feel where there used to be more knots, there are not anymore.
Oh, that's good. So yeah. it's loosened
so,
up.
So yeah, I can feel like, and I stand with my feet a little more in the earth, with my whole foot in the earth. If that makes any more sense.
To give you earthly lingo, you're getting your groove back.
Yeah, definitely. And almost literally, I think of it like that, because in trauma, the spirit, the soul, it's trying to get out of the experience of pain, and the human form and pain is too much for it, and it flees.
It's an entrapment.
Yeah, but it's trapped in the body and in the pain and in the fear of the pain.
It makes you too aware of the body.
Right, exactly, and it's overwhelming. And literally, I feel now more in my body, and like I am coming home, and I'm not trying to escape this. I'm actually trying to experience it more and more, and make this life longer and longer and longer. So that's, you know, I think that was one of the big things for me on the trip. And the main thing, and this is the one I would love to share with people out there, is that the biggest lesson I think I got on this trip was that I am great by myself, and I love being by myself.
That is an amazing thing to discover.
And I know you're at that point probably, and you are too. We all three here live by ourselves.
We live very solitary lives, you're right. And there's beauty in it. There's great beauty in it.
I just heard a quote from this woman who I can't wait to read this book. Her name was May Sarton. She's she writes journals, and she's a poet, and Dick Gordon did a thing on the story about her. And she said, solitude is the richness of the spirit, and loneliness is the poverty of the spirit.
I agree,
or something
with
like that. Something
I can,
like that.
I can totally agree with that, because I don't ever recall being lonely.
Yeah, solitude.
Unless it was for wanting of someone, of a relationship,
totally,
or something. But on my own, I feel no loneliness.
Solitude is priceless.
It is.
Yeah,
and you can get up anytime you want and go do what you want to do.
That's the thing. You know, when I was in Cherokee, North Carolina, I was camping in the Smokies, and I went to see the outdoor play Unto These Hills, which was about the Cherokee experience, and it was crying and all this stuff. It was beautiful. But when I left, it was foggy, and I made a wrong turn, and I passed the casino. And and I watched my mind go, hey, there's that casino. I've always wanted to see what the inside of that looked like, and because I love coming to Cherokee and seeing it. I've never thought about the casino. And then I watched my mind go, no, you can't go on the casino because you're on a spiritual quest, and you're camping in the Smokies, and you can't do that. You can't do that. And I went, F it, Blake, get in that casino right now and go walk around in there. And so I went, I put on a nice shirt and stuff, and parked in the parking deck 11 o'clock at night, and was like, I can do whatever I want. And I, you know, I'm not into gambling, but what I did, I followed my intuition and completely lost myself in love there. I was like Rumi dancing around. I was literally dancing and spinning around in the casino, walking around all these people that were chain smoking, pulling levers on the slot machines, and just going,
"The addicts
is great," and just like laughing and talking to everybody. And I went into the hotel, and I was like, I want to sit in every chair in this hotel. And I want to look at every painting in this hotel. And I did. I mean, I sat in nearly, probably not all of them, but nearly every chair in the whole hotel. It was phenomenal.
Well, all of life needs
the whole thing.
Yeah.
Right. All of life needs satire.
Yeah. It was such a good, I mean, that was like the first lesson on that trip, the big one. It was like, oh, I can do whatever I want. and I can do it anytime I want. And it was incredible. And I got that all the time, all over the place. And I don't need someone beside me to go, this is great, isn't it? Isn't this great? Don't you think?
I'm going
to
quote Gibran, Khalil Gibran, okay, who wrote that the soul is like a lotus of countless petals, and it walks on all paths.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's so my path and my yoga teaching, which is very not yoga, by the way. It's very just whatever I'm into at the moment. I just want people to know themselves more, and I want to know myself more. Whatever path I'm walking on feels great at the moment, and I let my feet sink into it.
We're here to live being here.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's totally what that trip taught me too. Like, you know, I can get so caught in the spiritual, and I know you know this stuff too, in the spiritual methods and practices, and oh, yoga is this, meditation is this, you know, this is this.
I try not to take any of it too seriously. So
yeah, well, you know, and I'm growing up, so yeah, I'm 26 years old, and I'm now finally getting that lesson.
Well, I'm growing older, but not up.
Yeah,
I'll stick with Jimmy Buffett on that one.
And by the way, Blake Tedder is a Jimmy Buffett fan.
I love Buffett.
I put him out of my life and heart for a long time. He's an amazing songwriter, and he sings about positivity and silly stuff. And hey, that's amazing to me. He's not cool to a lot of people. Screw him.
My two favorites are Fogelberg and Buffett.
Yeah.
There are many more that I love, but if I were to just tell you
great
stuff I can listen to anytime, that's...
Oh, that's awesome to know.
And very, very different mediums, but both positive.
Oh, good. I love just positive music. It is so good for me.
Absolutely.
I have one more song.
Please.
That this was, you know, I have so many songs. What I did on this trip is that I put my iPod on shuffle because I was in a place that I got all these books on tape. I couldn't listen to a book on tape. I was on too many 12-hour drives, and I wanted to, and it was... I don't know. It was taking me away from the experience of what was going on out of my windows.
You needed energy.
Which was incredible. And I just listened to whatever was on shuffle, and it was so much fun because I have thousands and thousands and thousands of songs.
Like having a built-in DJ, huh?
And it was. And I really, there's something mystical going on with iPod shuffle, and everybody who does it knows it. I've talked to them about it. But
it's plugged into a Ouija board, isn't it?
It's something like that. And iWeegee. And so I collected all these songs into a list that I loved, and... it's just such a meaningful list for me now that I can go back and go, I know where I was when I was listening
Fantastic.
To that song. And this song is the Waylon Jennings' Glory Bound. And on my way home from Franklin, Tennessee, Nashville, Tennessee, all the way to about Winston-Salem, North Carolina, I listened to this song.
Huh. I mean, and that's, I like the Waylon Jennings.
Yeah, and that's literally like eight hours.
It's a long haul, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's beautiful.
Because this song is called Glory Bound, and on my way back, I felt so much like I was coming home after being on... It was a true, true, true pilgrimage, and I really had that feeling of, wow, I just did something absolutely incredible, and I'm coming home. And it was just like... And it was actually... When this song came on my shuffle, it was at the exact moment when the actual plane crash happened. Like 10 years ago, like 9:30 in the morning, this song came on, and I just stopped and I listened to it, and I was crying and crying and crying and crying. And
there was something going on in that shuffle. And by the way, when I first came to America, my early childhood was spent around Pilot Mountain, Winston-Salem.
Oh, that's a holy site.
Yes.
Definitely. Okay, so here's Glory Bound by the Waylon Jennings.
When I hear that trumpet sound, that plagues me so. So I'm waiting for that train to come, and I know where she's coming from. Listen, can you hear her on the track? When I'm bored, I won't be looking back. Hallelujah, 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 hallelujah,
Well, I can't think of a better note to go out on. We've got a few minutes left with the show. Blake, really want to thank you. That was an incredibly appropriate piece of music.
I can imagine everything on that trip was so appropriate.
It was meant to be.
Yeah.
And I can definitely imagine the shuffling you speak of.
Yeah.
Those mystical things in life that really take over when they need to.
Yep. And if you don't mind, I just want to say one thing about a retreat I've got coming up.
Absolutely.
So my yoga teaching is called Deep Roots Yoga, and you can find out more about it at blaketedder.net. And it's a total thing, an amalgamation of all the things I'm into. And it's just super duper interesting and fun, and you've probably never experienced anything like it because it's totally coming out of me and coming through me, really. I teach locally, but I'm doing a retreat in the mountains of North Carolina this April 19th through 22nd. It's called Mountain Spirit Retreat, and it has room for 12 people. And I'm doing it in collaboration with a modern dancer, choreographer, a friend of mine from Brooklyn, New York, who's coming down. And it is a dance and deep roots yoga retreat. And we're going to be facilitating meditation, dance. We're going to be eating delicious meals that are home cooked there by a chef that we're bringing in. And then it has deep roots yoga outside on the mountain.
Wonderful.
And so I'm teaching people how to use like a landscape to bring a yoga practice or a movement, body movement, animal practice out into the landscape and stuff like that. So
true dance.
BlakeTedder.net. Yep.
Blake, sounds fascinating.
Yeah, thank you so much for being on.
This was a blast. Thank you.
Thank all you folks out there for listening. Next week, give a quick intro. We're going to have a call in from California. My friend, let me get his name back up. Got the paperwork in front of me. Gerald LeBaron is going to be calling in from California. He's part of a striving to put integrity and honor back into politics. And I think we'll just sort of let that unravel next week. Don't want to take too much away from the spiritual element we've been imbued with all morning. It's been absolutely beautiful. But tune us in again next week, and thank you for joining us. This is Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater on WCOM 103.5 FM signing off. Cheers.